Thank you, and first I would like to thank Glenn and Russ for putting this symposium together. It's been very educational for me to date, and I also would like to thank my co-authors on this paper who represent various universities in the Southeast. And I also would like to thank Cotton Incorporated and the state support committees from each of the southeastern states that helped fund a regional project that we worked on for the past several years. Dr. Green showed a similar slide to this earlier, but I did want to give you a little background about cotton production and insect management in the Southeast. But this particular slide represents the average number of insecticide applications applied to cotton in Georgia from 1986 up to 2007. If you'll look back in 1986, the average number of insecticides was about 16 per acre. So it was a very insecticide intensive management program for insects. But two significant events have happened since that time. Beginning in 1987, Georgia growers, in cooperation with the federal government, initiated a boll weevil eradication program in Georgia. And after about 4 or 5 years of intensive trapping of boll weevils and intensive spraying with malathion, boll weevils were eliminated. So in the blue bars from 1992 to 1995, you can see by eliminating the boll weevil, which allowed us to more fully utilize biocontrols for heliothion pest, we were able to reduce our insecticide applications down to about 4 to 5 per year. Well, then the second big event occurred in 1996 with the commercialization of BT transgenic cotton. And BT transgenic cotton provides excellent control of tobacco budworm, eliminating those sprays, but also significantly reduced the number of sprays for bollworm or corn earworm. So that further reduced our insecticide use to somewhere around 2 to 3 per acre. Now in recent years, these 2 to 3 sprays have primarily targeted boll feeding bugs, primarily stink bugs in the Southeast, is which we'll address today. It's also interesting to note that beginning in the early 90s, you know, for years entomologists that work in cotton producing states have made estimates for yield losses to the various species of insects. These are published annually in the Beltwide Cotton Conference proceedings. But what this particular graph is showing is bales lost or cotton lost to stink bugs in the U.S. represented by the red line and in the Southeast. But you can see, you know, as the number of sprays were reduced in the early 90s and mid 90s, you can see the damage from stink bugs has steadily increased. And a lot of this damage has occurred in the southeastern part of the U.S. Now, this increase in bug damage, we believe a major factor is that reduction in broad spectrum insecticide sprays. When we were targeting boll weevils or heliothions with broad spectrum insecticides, we were coincidentally controlling stink bugs and just keeping the numbers at sub-economic levels. The other point I do want to make about this bug situation, or we like to refer to them as boll feeding bugs, it's an actual complex of bugs that includes tarnished plant bug, clouded plant bug, leaf-footed bugs, and various stink bugs. But in the Southeast, we're primarily talking about brown stink bug as well as southern green and green stink bug. But even within the Southeast, complex can vary from state to state. It can vary from field to field within a state. It can vary within a field by time of year. Typically, we see a lot of Eustachys species early in the season in cotton, for example, in Georgia. And then we transition into more southern green type stink bugs. But if you just look at this chart on the left-hand side, the green bars represent the percent of green stink bugs observed in a given trial. And each of these bars represent, are in North Carolina on the left. And of course, the brown is for the Eustachys service. But if you come down to Georgia, you note that we see very few green stink bugs. We primarily see southern green stink bugs and brown stink bugs. So they rarely see southern green stink bugs in North Carolina. South Carolina is somewhat in the middle and sees all three species. But this does become important in terms of insecticide control because there is some differences in susceptibility. We have a a more difficult time controlling Eushista species with pyrethroids, for example. We really don't achieve acceptable control with pyrethroids in cotton when we're targeting brown stink bugs, so we tend to use OPs for those. The other thing that does, at least we believe, the damage potential for each of these species is similar. Now, I'm not sure that that is true, but that's what it appears to be at this point in time. One of our earlier speakers did talk about stink bug feeding, but on cotton, they primarily feed on reproductive tissues or reproductive structures. That would be seed developing in a cotton boll and maybe the tissues surrounding those seeds. The type injury we see on cotton could be physical destruction of the seed. If they damage the seed, that would impact development of the lint. The lint is just an extension of the seed, so to speak. But perhaps most importantly, when a stink bug feeds on a developing cotton boll, a pathogen could be introduced, or at least a wound is created that would allow pathogens to enter that developing boll. If we look at the reproductive structures of a cotton plant, and cotton actually initiates reproduction over about a 7 to 8 week period, but you have flower buds or squares shown on the left. It takes about 21 days for that flower bud to bloom. And after it blooms, we have seed pods or bowls, which will develop to maturity in about 45 days. Now, bowls are susceptible to stink bugs from about 25 days from the time that position blooms. Stink bugs do appear to prefer to feed on medium-sized bowls. However, they can feed on very small bowls. Oftentimes, these very small bowls will shed, and they also can feed on larger bowls. But in terms of effects on yield, bowls less than 25 days of age tend to be where we're concerned about protecting. When stink bug feeds on developing bowls, we can see some injury symptoms. On the left, you can see on the outer surface of this bowl, you can see some sunken lesions. These don't always form, but they do form most of the time. But that's a characteristic symptom of feeding injury on a bowl. One which is also perhaps a more reliable indicator at this time is the development of a callus growth or wart on the inner surface of the bowl wall, shown here as well as here, or also the presence of stained lint, or the beginning of a development of this pathogen effect. But these warts form in about 48 hours from the time the bowl has been fed upon. As these bowls do mature and attempt to open, we see a wide range of variability in how this stink bug feeding impacts bowls and ultimately the yield of that individual bowl. In some situations, we may see very little effect of feeding on cotton boll. In others, we may see localized discoloration on locks of cotton. We may see locks that fail to adequately fluff, so they will not be harvestable. And in yet more severe situations, bowls are completely lost. But when farmers grow cotton or market cotton, they actually market cotton based on quality of the lint or fibers produced. Every bale of cotton that is sold is classed in the U.S. where they do various fiber quality measures. What we've observed over the last couple of years, that if you have excessive stink bug damage, it has a negative impact on basically every measure of fiber quality. And poor fiber quality can lead to problems downstream when fibers are spun into yarn or thread. And also farmers receive a reduced price for their product. But it is good news in that over our work in this regional project, we have determined that if we preserve yield appropriately, and that means, in my opinion, if we're managing stink bugs so we maximize profits on a farm, we do preserve fiber quality sufficiently. I do want to touch again on this variability, and this is a little bit confusing. And But I want to stress that we can make measurements of bug damage in the field, but how that damage impacts yield can vary tremendously. And this is some data we put together following the 2005 crop. And basically all I've done is on the vertical axis, I have yield from a given trials. And on the horizontal axis, we have what we call year-end boll damage. And that's just a composite of harvestable bolls, and it lets us know how much stink bug damage occurred. But just to simplify this, I really want you to look at the slopes and what it basically means. As an example, if we had 20% boll damage, if we look at where we saw minimal impact of yield, we may have only lost 26 pounds of cotton. Whereas if we were in an environment where stink bug damage really manifested itself, we could have lost over 200 pounds of cotton. But there's a lot of variability in what happens in terms of yield, the impact on yield through stink bug feeding. There's a lot of different reasons this variability could occur. For the purposes of that study, we just scored bolls as damaged or undamaged. We did not take into account the severity of the damage. But there's also, when did the damage occur? How did the plant compensate? Cotton has a tremendous ability to compensate for insect damage. But what I think, or we think, is most important is this environment that the crop is being produced in, or these bugs are damaging cotton in, has a lot of influence on how the damage is going to manifest and influence yield. Because there's one thing for sure, when we see severe yield losses in cotton, we see a lot of boll rots associated with the damage. Now, is this due to environmental conditions being conducive for these rots to develop? Or do we have something like I like to refer to as clean bugs and dirty bugs? Do we have bugs that are really introducing a lot of these pathogens which are creating these boll rots? So I think this is an exciting area where we really need to understand this more. We've been cooperating with a group out of Texas led by Gino Medrano, and we've actually sent bolls from the southeastern states, and I should have included Florida. But they've helped us identify bacteria and fungi associated with these damaged bolls. And one thing they found is that the pathogens present, the severity of the infection, vary by location, vary by year. That shouldn't be surprising. They've also demonstrated southern green stink bug to introduce a bacterial rot into cotton, which was the first time I was aware of that. But it's interesting, when they did these transmission studies, they also observed that if a stink bug infects that boll with this bacteria 3 weeks past bloom, it had minimal impact on yield. And that goes back to when we did a lot of our bug studies. We came up with 25 days, and you know, 3 weeks is pretty close. So we really believe this is an important step we need to correlate with the bugs. And hopefully, you know, they will have a better understanding of this infection process. Perhaps down the road we could have a tool to help us know if we have clean bugs or dirty bugs. We're dealing with migrating adults into cotton. What is the source of those adults? Are they, you know, is there a reservoir for a pathogen? So I think this is a lot of excitement as we go into the future. We've heard a lot about landscapes. I believe this is a great need, and boy, we've come a long way in a short time understanding stink bugs in the southeast. Glenn and Russ and others have really done a good job. It's going to hopefully one day give us an idea about forecasting populations. We definitely have identified high-risk areas. Going to be opportunities for biocontrol. And also down at the bottom, you know, are there reservoirs for pathogens that are damaging to cotton? I think we're going to learn a lot. In terms of sampling stink bugs in cotton, we rely primarily at this point in time looking at internal boll damage. Right now, that's our most precise way of detecting damage in the field. We do sample bolls that are about the diameter of a quarter. That's the preferred feeding site. And again, it's our best method for timing an insecticide. We also have some understanding about distribution of bugs in the field. They are clumped in the field. Glenn Tillman did an excellent job talking about some of the edge effects near peanuts, but they are clumped in nature within the field, so we do have to, 5 minutes, we do have to take a lot of samples. And at this point in time, you know, cracking bowls open, looking for these internal symptoms of injury is time consuming. It's our best method for timing insecticides. But again, there is some cost associated with time of determining that need. Eric Blinka and others have been working on trying to correlate these external symptoms with internal symptoms. And if we can, or if they can work this out, that's going to offer us a lot more efficient method to make decisions. So we'll be field testing this, I would think, in the next years or years to come. We've done a lot of threshold work in cotton the last few years. Our current threshold is we trigger on 20% internal damage. 2005, we had a very serious outbreak of stink bugs in the southeast, and it was kind of disturbing to me. This is a summary of 11 trials. You know, we protected cotton, but we compared our threshold to where we sprayed weekly trying to eliminate damage. And again, this was heavy pressure, but we still, in my mind, weren't good enough, or we didn't protect the cotton adequately. If you put economics on that, in this particular year, you would have come out ahead to spray weekly, and we don't want that. So we've reevaluated our threshold. We're actually trying to refine our threshold, and we went back and just tried to understand a little more about how the phenology of the crop could impact the potential yield impact. And basically what we did, we initiated several trials where we were trying to identify times during the blooming period of cotton where the yield penalty or was the potential for loss was the greatest. This is a good picture, and it just looks like a field of cotton, but this is a trial where in the front area of this field we initiated sprays the first week of broom and continued for 7 more weeks. Then we initiated it the second week of bloom, third week of bloom, fourth week of bloom, and ultimately at the back we had untreated cotton. But it was very obvious that there's a critical window during mid-bloom where we really needed to protect stink bugs. And it's just a very simple math. If you look at how a cotton plant grows and develops, the greatest number of bulbs susceptible to stink bugs at even any point during the year occur during that critical window of weeks 3 through 5 of bloom. So what we've done is just put a little common sense to our threshold. During that critical window, we've lowered our threshold because there's more to lose. However, on each side of that critical window, we've raised our threshold because we don't have a lot of bulbs to protect during that time. So we've done field trials in 2006 and 2007. Good for our growers, bad for our project. We had very low numbers of stink bugs. But we still believe we're on the right track using what we've termed a dynamic threshold and just really understanding the crop and how the bugs, the damage potential varies within that crop. Glenn Tillman did a great job talking about the peanut-cotton interface. This is an aerial photo of a field trial we had in 2005, treated cotton, untreated cotton. But you can see as you get away from this source or peanuts, the difference in our treated and untreated went from 82%, these plots were 125 feet long, down to a 56% loss. But once you got out 250 feet in the field, you kind of stabilized. But we've got a lot to understand about other interfaces, whether it be China berry trees, pecan trees, corn, peanuts, but there's obviously an edge effect. And I really think these findings, this edge effect, and I heard our previous speaker on apples talking about the borders, but I think it gives us a lot of opportunity for innovative management. Obviously, farmscape planting, trap crops, which you'll hear about later, perhaps barrier crops. John Ruberson's looked at that a little bit. But one thing I'm excited about is something termed infield border applications, where we actually spray the perimeter of the cotton field. If you just used a 25-acre field as an example, you know, you would only be spraying 15-20% of the entire field. You're actually almost creating a moat around the field. Will that impact stink bug migration into the middle of the field? Who knows? But a lot of questions, a lot of opportunities, and with that, I'll conclude.